The Sacred Changemakers podcast is supported by Coaches Business School, helping the world's most caring coaches build a purpose-driven and profitable business that makes a meaningful impact in our world. Check out their unique frameworks and methods to help you transform and grow your business. Now is the time to build a bridge from what you want in life to include what the world needs. You can do well in business and do good. And together, we can make a meaningful difference. Find out more at coachesbusinessschool.com.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. I hope you're having a lovely experience of life today. And I hope we can make it even better by sharing our soul deep conversations that we are fast becoming known for. Our guest on the podcast today is Kieran Bain. He's a visionary thinker and the architect behind the innovative blockchain social media network, Pangea. In this episode, Kieran speaks to the problems and the challenges inherent within the current social media landscapes, and yet, you know, not always visible to us as users. Kieran emphasizes the troubling realities of content monetization, the quest for self-validation, and the altered sense of self that these platforms can engender. So our conversation today is called Innovating Imagination, a social platform for all, which is a key part of Kieran's vision for a better world for us all. Now, he also shares his journey from a high-powered salesman to conceptualizing Pangea, a now three-year endeavor to rebuild social connections by fostering authentic creativity and also putting the power back into the hands of creators. He casts something, I guess, of a critical eye on what he describes as the casino algorithm pervasive in platforms like TikTok, and he proposes a new social engagement model using blockchain that democratizes governance and distribution through a very different design, functionality, and remuneration model that mirrors the human mind structure. As you're going to hear, Kieran is creating Pangea to operate on a unique economic model that includes a subscription and pay-to-post system, returning 90% of revenues to creators. So why not join us as we explore Kieran's vision for Pangea to harmonize technological abundance with societal healing, pivoting towards a more human platform that values individuals and their unique stories? And I would say, prepare to be inspired, because this conversation, although it's true that it challenges the status quo, it also reimagines the potential of digital spaces to unite rather than divide. So with that, let me introduce you to Kieran Bain. Hey, Kieran, welcome to the Sacred Changemakers podcast.
Hello, Jane. Thank you very much for having me on here, especially after I tried to get on here at 10 o'clock in the morning and we'd set up at the clock of the evening. So I think it's fantastic we finally managed to meet. That's brilliant. Yeah.
We certainly have. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today, Kieran, because it's kind of got a different flavour to some of our other guests. So I'm really excited to talk to you. But before I do, you know, our listeners, they've just heard your professional bio. And what I'd love to do is get you to go beneath that just for a moment and tell us something about the real life human that lies behind the bio. Who is he?
Kieran, what am I like? I'm a very creative person. I'm very funny. I've struggled throughout life to really find a place for myself. When I was in my 20s, I sort of kind of filled in this wandering shaman archetype where I was very interested in the esoteric and the otherworldly. And that's always been a big part of my life, being interested in mythology and religion and constructs by which we break down reality that are not always scientifically based. And I've struggled throughout life to really find a container to put that in. And I really, my life has been about trying to get the expanse of Kieran and be able to put it into a box in a container that I feel comfortable with. And that's really where I've gone throughout my life. And I've tried various different ways of doing that. And obviously, what's evolved that more than anything else is my connection with other people. So if I'd have gone back to my 20s when I really wanted to be a writer and a writer of books and a writer of media. I also was kind of quite an insular person, insular emotionally, and quite a frightened person in a way. And therefore, I would want to just kind of put writing down on the page and have people kind of take it away and just get my ideas. Now, as I've grown older, I think there is something wonderful about being able to see the world through other people's eyes and being able to kind of facilitate with my skills and my understanding. Often I'll come to people and they won't have a voice or won't be able to talk, and I kind of give them that voice. I give them that ability to speak and that ability to express themselves. So I can kind of see myself as a conduit or a facilitator or someone who helps them understand or make symbols out of what it is that's going on inside them. And that's kind of where I've become. And I think that's something I very much say to people, which is that everything in terms of creativity is about emotional connection. And there was something that you said on a call the other day that I really agree with, which is that what we do on the inside reflects out on the outside. And I would put that almost as in terms of how well you connect with yourself emotionally is how well you can connect with others. So if you're able to connect with your own emotions and actually understand those emotions and give those emotions validity and time and space, then you can pick up on what other people are actually giving you. So that's some of the, that's just gone down a bit of a path. And I feel like I'm wittering on, but yeah, that's kind of a quick snapshot of where I am, yeah.
That's lovely. I mean, you've had such a diverse career, kind of spanning from improv comedy right the way through to brand messaging and probably lots of other threads in between. And I just wonder, when you look back, Kieran, I mean, what has had the greatest influence on your life?
So there's two incidents, which I would say, which is firstly that I come from a family that is... come from a family that you look back, especially along the line of my mother, the female line, that's been beset by narcissism and borderline personality disorder. And you can tell this because when you speak to my grandmother and my great grandmother, they would have these stories about how the kind of wrongs that they'd done each other. And it was said about my great grandmother that she was just born jealous. And I think how can a child be born jealous? A child is born unformed. This is a role that the family has put on the child. And then my grandmother would say about how my great grandmother, I don't know, let's just put it like this, disappeared a puppy. So that my grandmother found a puppy and my great grandmother disappeared it. So this just gives you some idea of the games that were the kind of being played. And the home that I was brought up in was very restrictive and very, very restrictive. And it felt, looking back, it almost felt like there was a kind of cult reality to it. And when I was about 18 years old, I got involved in psychedelics, magic mushrooms, which grow all around here in Norfolk. You can just go and pick them. And I remember taking some, and I remember... this is sort of one of the formative experiences. And during this experience, I was having a really bad time without going into too much detail, yeah? And I was like, this is really too much. This is bad. I'm not enjoying this. And I went home, and I remember lying on my sofa downstairs about 3 a.m, my parents upstairs. And I was like, okay, I can't fight this anymore. Whatever this huge... horrible blackness is that's threatening to take me over, it can just have me. And I remember literally the moment that I gave into it and stopped fighting it, it flipped into this kind of blue gold fractal of kind of Vedic pranic energy through my breath. As I breathed in, I was kind of floating in this, and I got this very deep sense that everything that we need to know about life is already encoded inside us through our emotions and our love. And that was a big change for me. It had a profound effect on me. It made me see that the difference between love and fear, and that, that I'd spend this huge amount of time growing up in this family system where everything was based on fear and control and what could go wrong and the continual catastrophization of events over and over again. And I suddenly realized that life didn't have to be like that, that there was another way to live life and that we could live life based on connection and what could, you know, what could possibly go right and what could, and this was hugely, hugely, hugely transformative for me, massively, massively transformative. My only regret about it, and I think this is changing now, is that we didn't have the frameworks. There were no frameworks of understanding to put this experience within. There was no, you know, it's not like a qualitative thing, a quantitative thing where you can measure the change or you can kind of like say what this, where this change goes. It was very difficult for me in that I suddenly felt there was this massive change. I didn't have the language to speak about it. I didn't have the words. I knew that something had changed inside me and I couldn't tell what it was. So that was my only regret about it. And I guess the second big thing that changed me was in 2006. I was at a party and I was attacked and I defended myself. And the guy who attacked me was a high court barrister. And as a result of this, I got arrested and they tried to take me to Crown Court. And the whole thing was really stressful. I thought I was going to go to prison for like 7 years. And as a result, I had a mental breakdown. So I had like a personal mental breakdown. And in the end, we went to court and there was the judge said there was no case to answer because the witnesses were there at the time who corroborated my story, one of whom was an off-duty police officer. So the why it went this far into court, I don't know. But it was one of those situations where my lawyer kept saying they're not going to take you to the magistrates. There is no case. He kept saying there was no case. The CPS won't prosecute. There's no case. But then it kept, every time he said something won't happen, it went and happened. And so this became really, really tough for me to deal with. And I just drank more and more to try and get through it. And I really thought I was going to go to Penderfield prison for 6 years. And it really, really kind of, the kind of carnage it caused in my life took me about 3 to 4 years to get over. Yeah. And so I went from being a high powered salesman working for cable and wireless at the time to fortunately, as I came out of it, the company actually went bankrupt. Our division went bankrupt and I got a huge redundancy payment, which was quite fortunate in allowing me to segue out of it. But I was lost for about three years. I was completely, completely kind of like, what do I do now? Yeah. I had to ask some deep questions about where I'd been going, what I'd been doing, who I was. Was sales right for me? Was that kind of lifestyle that I've been living right for me? And things changed.
It's really interesting because I know when I look back on my life, when I think about the things that have been the biggest turning points, it's always the stuff that brings us to our knees. It's always the things that are the most challenging that are also kind of have the seeds of our greatness within them. And it sounds, as I'm listening to you talk, and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing so openly, because, you know, people often think when they're listening on podcasts that, you know, those of us that are on there are kind of untouchable. Life doesn't touch us in the same way as it does everybody else, but of course it does. So it's lovely to hear your vulnerability in that way. Now, the other thing I can also hear, Kieran, are the seeds that were planted early on in your life that have brought you to the work that you're doing today. So tell us about that. I mean, what is it that's most alive for you right now in your work?
Okay, so my work, I mean, what I'm doing is I'm creating a blockchain social media network called Pangea. So if we look back, when I talk about this time, around the time this incident happened and I thought I was going to go to prison, there's a second part to it, which was that at the same time, I was also taking my career as a social media influencer, if you will, was taking off in before even influencers existed. So I was doing a lot of writing on this site called Don't Stay In. Don't Stay In was a kind of music site, and it could have been Facebook had it not had been based around music. So Facebook obviously is based around students. Don't Stay In was based around music, and the music industry is very kind of clicky and toxic, and there are many layers to it and tribes within it. And I did a lot of work for Don't Stay In. I ran groups. I posted over 100,000 comments. I wrote articles for them. I went and interviewed, you know, I went and interviewed Tiesto, Paul Van Dyk. I went to Ibiza for a week. They sent me to Ibiza for a week. They sent me to Bestival, where I interviewed Gary Newman and Underworld. I had like a really good time, but they never gave me any money for it. And I was always assuming that it would turn into a career. But I never really understood how to turn it into a career. I didn't understand the game of agents and right. and popularity. You know, like I'd always been quite anti-capitalist, that like being when in my formative kind of experiences going back to my psychedelics, I'd always seen money as a system of control, and I was quite anti-capitalist, so I didn't have any idea how to turn all this fame and all this recognition into music. And I came out of the experience feeling quite jaded, because what I'd wanted, I'd given all this value away, given all these ideas away, and I'd ended up getting quite badly trolled, and quite badly, the whole thing had gone quite south at the same time. And I thought, no one else should ever have to go through this. Like, young people, it should be about their creativity. It shouldn't be about them having to try and make a business or trying to fit in with the ideas of advertisers or algorithms or social trends. Their creativity is what's valuable. What's in their hearts? And what's in their hearts is not always what fits in line with advertiser standards or communities. Like, there's a great big explosion of information and feeling and ideas going on that the internet has managed over the last 10 to 15 years to corral into these very boring, very shallow, very meaningless tranches of TikTok videos and YouTube kind of influence, and when no one's really talking about their real experiences. So around 2012, I started experimenting with ideas for social media networks, started thinking about how one could work. And then I started thinking about systems of payment on there. And the big difference that I came up with social media network was two things. First of all, I wanted to take a subscription model so that people would pay for being part of the network. And the second thing I looked at was that you would pay to post. So if you thought that your content was worthwhile and you thought this network was worthwhile, you would pay to post. And right, so those were my original ideas. And in 2017, I came across the blockchain and Ethereum and the idea of smart contracts. So smart contracts allow you to automate all the payments throughout a network. And so I thought, oh, great, this would be a great idea for my blockchain project, for my social project. I kind of worked on it a bit with a couple of guys in Norwich who kind of got the idea, who ran website houses. And then in 2020, some good friends of mine in Brighton, they said, look, you know, it was lockdown. They were looking for a crazy idea. They wanted something with the potential to change the world. I said, I've got this idea that's been kicking around. And they were okay. And I thought that they were going to laugh me out of the park, but they were like, no, we love this. We love this. So the four of us have got together and we've now been building Pangea for around 3 years. We've got a prototype product. It works. It is a social media application on the blockchain. And we want to be the first use case that really takes blockchain away from these crazy stores of value and speculation and actually provides a reason for blockchain to exist. And the reason for blockchain to exist is because our social media network, because it's on the blockchain, is owned by everybody. So there is no centralized authority behind it. It is owned by everybody. You can get paid for your views on your social media, and you can check those views at any time. And those views are completely trustless because we work on the on the blockchain. So if media and information is way too important to be owned by either Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, you know, either sides of this growing US political debate that seems to be dominating everything at the moment, it should be owned by everybody. And like, we actually, if we're going to use information to break through into this new eon of Aquarius and all this kind of stuff that people keep saying, well, people keep saying that there's this breakthrough coming. More and more people are waking up, more and more people are aware of the money printing and the games of power and the masks are slipping away. Well, where are we going to be talking about this? I'd like Pangaea to be that place about where we're talking about this. And just like my psychedelic experience all those years ago, I'd like it not to be about fighting and getting back involved in the control. I'd like it to be about somehow building a new community that's based on what's good and abundance and what's there and what's loving about us. Because I think there's this great thing that we have in humanity, and for too long we've allowed the darker sides to propagate. Maybe that's just the way the world is, but yeah. Mm. And that's what I like Pangaea to be. I'm just rabbiting on that.
No, but I love it. And I love the idea, because in a way it's almost turning social media upside down, you know, in terms of what it is and how it works today. And I know there are a lot of people that aren't even fully aware of the issues that we face, you know, with things like how they're scraping social media for big data and then selling it and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I wonder, just before we go into Pangaea, because I love the philosophical roots that you're kind of bringing to the fore here, Kieran, before we go there, could you just, I mean, just in like a bullet point kind of way, just give us some sense of what's wrong with the social media networks that we have today? What are the dangers of that a lot of us aren't aware of?
First big thing around that is the problem with social media network is that there's a contract being put in place. It's an implicit contract. The contract is, you give me all your good stuff and I'll give you broadcast. So yeah. You give me your creativity, your ideas, your the best of work, you give me updates about your life. You kind of like give me as much as you can, and I will give you this broadcast, this spread of your ideas. The more you give me, the more I will spread your ideas about. So on a platform, the more a person uses a platform, the more, like LinkedIn is one that we talk about. So you get these LinkedInpreneurs and they're like, you've got to post every day. And if you're posting every day, like, you're just making stuff up, and it starts getting almost punitive for you to do it, but you've got to do it because you notice that the day that you didn't do it, now your reach is halved, yeah, and then you've got to spend 2 hours a day. So are you actually getting a benefit out of LinkedIn, or is LinkedIn just got like 60 million workers who are working on adding stuff into LinkedIn? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that social media is inherently narcissistic, and I don't mean that in the way that you think it is. But narcissists, he falls in love with his reflection, not himself. People always think narcissists fall in love with themselves, but they don't. They fall in love with their reflection. So by reflection, they mean internalized, externalized value. So someone who's a narcissist has very poor self-esteem and is always looking to combat that self-esteem by externalized value. So within social media, your content is considered valueless until you get a like, until you get a share, until you get a sale off it. So there's no one sitting there and saying like your content has got an inner merit. It's being judged all the time by these external forces, what it can do, what it's done on the platform, how many views it's got, how many likes for it. So it creates this kind of feeling within people that unless they're kind of getting validation externally for their content, that they are not worthwhile internally. And what this will do over time is it means that you will start shaping your content either consciously or subconsciously towards the audiences. And those audiences are being controlled by the algorithm. So you're now changing yourself through the content that you're making in order to become a salesperson for a platform that's not even selling you, right? So that's the second thing that's wrong with it. The third thing that's wrong with it is obviously the fact that the information that's coming towards you is subtly curated in order to change you into a better consumer. So you are the product on the platform. And this was said by Jaron Lanier. So it's a really famous quote. He was in like a really big Netflix documentary called The Social... Was it called The Social Network? Social Dilemma. It's called The Social Dilemma. Social Dilemma. And he made this... He's like the long-haired dreadlock guy on there. He's written a couple of books. He's pretty cool. He said, on one level, we say that the if the platform is free, you're the product. That was his level one thing, yeah? But then he amended that to be a little bit more nuanced. And he said, if the platform is free, it is actually the small imperceptible changes in your behavior that are the product. So like what you're being changed is you're being spiked all the time by this well-tested content that's being fired at you to keep you in activated states, to keep you in buying states, to keep you in states where you are, you feel bad about the fact that you don't have the latest car, the latest iPhone, the latest house, the latest. So like, if you notice, the more people that are on social media, the more depressed they get. We've got an epidemic of mental health disorders amongst young women that has never been seen to this level before. And we can blame the dating game, we can blame Tinder, we can blame the falling down of society, but I blame Instagram, and I blame Instagram for creating unrealistic standards of beauty and competitiveness within women. With, I think it's 70% of young women reporting negative feelings around self-image after using Instagram, making Instagram the most deleted app in 2023.
Yeah, and I in many ways, I totally understand what you're saying. It's so funny. I have a personal story just to share. In 2014, I lost my mom. And at the time I was, obviously I'm from the UK, but I live in the US. And one of the main ways I stayed in touch with my group of friends was through Facebook. So I was really quite posting a lot on Facebook during that year. And my husband for Christmas gave me, there was this way you could turn your Facebook for a year into a book. And so he got this done for me and gave me this book. And actually, it had a very unexpected impact on me, because when I opened this book, Kieran, I was like, I want this woman's life. Like, who is this? Like, this was not the life I thought I'd led in 2014, looking back. And then I realized it was a persona I'd created online, like to be this perfect woman or whatever. And I was like, from then on, I was like, oh, and I realized the impact it was having on me. And I kind of withdrew quite a lot from 2014 onwards. And so it was just fascinating to look with external eyes at my own behavior, if you like, on a social media platform. And to see it in a book where all of my posts and all of my imagery and everything, I was like, wow, I had no idea how it had subtly kind of come in and shaped me in a way during that year. So I totally get what you're on about.
What you just said something that really piqued my interest. Just out of interest, what were those external changes that were starting to manifest through this adoption of this persona? You mentioned.
So some of the changes were, instead of me being completely authentic, it's exactly what you said. I was showing up with the word should. Who should I be? Who do my audience want me to be? What do they want to see next? Like, they don't want to see the mess. They just want to see, you know, the beautiful insights that I'm having and, you know, the sunset and the sunrise if I just happen to be out at that time. And then what was happening was I'd be thinking, oh, because I have dogs, I'll take my dog for a walk. But instead of going like when I wanted to go, I would go at the beginning of the day or the end of the day so I could get a beautiful shot and all this stuff. But all the time I was losing myself in relationship with my audience. I was losing Jane and what mattered most to Jane by showing up a little bit like a dancing monkey and what I thought they wanted to see.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that like you go, oh, So this is why I love what you're doing at Pangea, because I've heard you describe it as a map of the human imagination and mirroring the structure of the human mind. So I wonder if you can elaborate on that a little bit, because I know you've translated it into platform design and functionality, Kieran. So what's...
So actually, that's a really good question. So I'm a great believer that good ideas that persist, and that you should look back for good ideas, and that you shouldn't change something that's broken. So one of the things that I really love about the internet is I love 1990s internet. And even though the websites were like these horrific, awful colored things with dancing fairies, there was so much more interesting stuff that you could find. And there were like these huge, like you could traverse and you could find all kinds of stuff. And there would, and I don't know what's happened to the internet now. And you try and explain to young people what the internet was like there, that you could find these like troves of documents, these personal experiences, all anonymous and all very strange and all kind of different. And I would love it. And so I looked back and I looked at Tim Berners-Lee and I thought about what he was trying to create. And I noticed that he was trying to create this kind of nodal network where every single website was connected or had the ability to be connected to other websites through hyperlinks. So you kind of like have this bubble and stick kind of structure. So when I was trying to create Pangea, when I first created Pangea, I looked back to the Tim Berners-Lee way that he created the internet. And I wanted to use that rather than everything being algorithmically curated into this feed, like a slot machine generated. So if we look at TikTok, TikTok is a casino feed. So TikTok works on a casino algorithm whereby it knows exactly what content that you like, but it knows that if it just served you a continuous stream of content that you liked, you wouldn't find it interesting. So what it does is it uses like this slot machine generator where each piece of content you pull down, it asks you, is this a winner? Is this a winner? So you have to scroll through four or five videos, then you get your dopamine. Yeah, I found the winner. I really like this one. Great. Then you've got three more. Here's another one. So it's like a little content slot machine that you're playing with TikTok. And that's why TikTok is so hyper addictive. So, but I didn't want any of that. I wanted just content to be like, if I'm on a piece of information that I find interesting, give me more of it, like back it up. Like give me someone who says this is false. Give me someone who says this is true. Give me like some like more context to the information. Most of the information that we're getting on the internet now is like, here's some information. And it's like, well, is this true? Is this false? Is there any fact checking? Who's fact checking the fact checkers? Like, I would like to know these things. I would like to know about the culture of information and how it's coming to me. So with Pangea, we have this ability to create these chains of information and these linked nodes of information, which at the time I thought was very similar to the human imagination and how the human brain works. And what I wanted was something that really kind of hit a kind of, what's the word here, kind of sympathy with the artistic community. So I wanted this grand vision of the project, which would be that Pangea would be creating a map of the human imagination. Unfortunately, it's not really landed with anybody, but that was you brought me back to it. And that was the kind of grand idea that we could kind of like work together to build this huge, huge kind of like repository of information that we could all use to better understand ourselves. Yeah.
I love that. And, you know, and in a way, you know, you're saying that in some ways it hasn't landed with people, but is this still like the framework that you're building on top of, this like nodal framework that helps content creators? Because what I'm hearing is it's actually helping content creators evolve their content by giving them, it sounded like, diverse perspectives around whatever it is they're kind of probing into at one time.
So, sorry to jump in, Jane. I didn't. Yeah. So the big thing is that like, what do we stand for? Like, looking back and looking all those times, creativity has value, right?
Right.
You have value. Your creativity has value. You have, like, you are not like this machine. You're not like like the current social media thing, it's almost like the Matrix, you know. I know that's been used a million times, but you're almost like this sort of like you're involved in this kind of like ectoplasmic egg where you're just continually feeding experience into the thing to keep it going. And I'm saying, no, 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 you're the value, you have value. Get involved in communities, in parts of the network where your information, if it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, or if it's got loads of people who want to get behind it because they want the social shine of saying, look, here's Jane, she seems quite popular in my space. I'll click a like and put a comment on there. So I get a bit more shine and like from Jane's network. If I keep showing up on Jane's network, then Jane can show up on my network and then we can cross-pollinate followers and then I've got more followers, and you know, and all this kind of stuff that goes on. Like, no, actually, you're the value. Your creativity is the value. So because your creativity has value, where do you want your creativity to show up? Where does it fit into the world of ideas? Where is it best suited? Where do you want to connect it? Like, don't worry about the algorithm showing you where it's connected, yeah? If it's about ducks, yeah, then don't you want it to appear on where there's more stuff about ducks and your own experiences about ducks? And suddenly it's about ducks, not about whether you went out at midday and had, you know, the right kind of bread to feed the ducks, and you know, you've got like you spent 8 hours just getting this perfect little shot of you being reflected in the duck's black little eye or whatever's going on. And so that's it. And then like the system is designed to pay you for your content. So it's about how many views your content gets and just giving you that value back into your content. Pangea is about saying your creativity has value, which is the same for me as saying you have value and your what you're saying has value and your stories have value. And hopefully if we can get it right, then it's actually giving people a space to say, actually, you as you are has value. It's not about you quaffering your own identity into this strange digital persona, as you put it, so that you can get whatever scam rewards are coming for you further down the line. Yeah.
Yeah. And
people used to like it. I mean, one doesn't want to go on a nostalgia trip, but you just look at the news. I mean, the news is one great thing to look at. And have you heard about the Walgreens wage theft case?
No, I haven't. No, what was that?
I believe I'm right in saying, maybe one of your listeners can fact check me, but I believe that the Walgreens wage theft case was the largest wage theft case in US history. How many internet articles did it get? One article. Because on that day, and you might actually remember this, a homeless man or a very poor man in New York City went into a shop and loaded up a black bin bag full of stuff and just rode it out of the shop. And they kind of like, there was all these people taking images. And I believe that got over 500,000 shares on social media. And I don't know whether it's us, a society, a gradual conspiracy between us and the platforms that we've all been implicit in that's allowed us to get to these kind of places, but we're missing out on the big things that matter for strange, frivolous things that allow us to judge people who don't need to be judged. And I think that like over with social media, we've lost the ability to find the important information. And you could talk about checks and balances on power, and maybe we need those as well now more than ever.
No, I think that's very true in so many different ways. I think it is. But it sounds like Pangea offers some real benefits to creators that are very different to what they get in other social media networks. So can you just take us through, like, what are the benefits for creators? Because you already mentioned that, you know, you're returning revenues to them.
So the two big ones are, the biggest one is that you get viewed, you get paid. Yeah, right. So you get viewed, you get paid. That's number one. Number two is that you curate your own content. So if you want to add it to the network, you choose where it shows up on the network. Number three is it's completely community led, so there are no advertising standards. There's no advertising standards. There's no community guidelines. There's no rules that are being imposed by a corporate entity that is ensuring that its interests or its speech or its views are protected. So this is like a free space where all expression within reason, obviously there are certain forms of expression that we don't want on there without going into detail. And we'll get rid of these. So we're going to have what they call a KYC system. So everybody who comes on the platform must be verified. So they've got to be verified. We've looked at various verification systems ranging from eyeball scans through to there's a chip in your passport. I didn't know this, that can be used to verify who you are, so that everybody who comes on the platform must be proven to be who they are. Therefore, if people start doing illegal stuff on the platform, we can say, that's it, we're just going to report you to the authorities. I don't know if you know that Mastodon, I believe I'm right in saying, had a lot of problems with unwelcome content on the platform. So you've got a lot of, that's another benefit. And it's really, that is, the rules are created by yourself. Yeah, the rules are created by the users. The users create the community. It's the way that they want it to be. Once it's up and running, it's on the blockchain. So even though I have quite a few coins, that's my share in it. Once it's gone and it's out there, I have no more power over it than anybody else. Mm. Yeah, I have no more power over it than any other user. I am just a user on Pangea. And on my views, maybe my views, but once it's up and running in motion, it's up and running and it can't be shut down, it can't be stopped, it's going. The biggest challenge that we have at the moment, however, is that there are many of these things out there and there are many different models. None of them quite have our model, but SocialFi, they call it the SocialFi space, has been seen as one that's ripe for disruption by blockchain technologies. And there are many, many of these things out there. And when we started it in 2020, there weren't. But now there are lots and lots of things out there. And so the biggest challenge is getting people on it, bootstrapping it. How do we get the first users on it? Which is, like, I hope you don't ask me about that, because we're still working on like some propositions, like without changing too much about the platform now. But that's the biggest challenge without question is, How do we really get the people on there? How do we get people excited about it? If we want people to have these different behaviors to what they're doing on Facebook and Instagram and those kind of places, how do we really kind of fire them up to do that? And so that's what we're currently working on at the moment. But I would say that on the whole, the project is, I veer from, why did I start this, to this is going to be the best thing in the world. And if I hadn't started this, what would I be doing with my life? Like, it gives me a tremendous sense of meaning and purpose and something to really believe in. But at the same time, it's also incredibly terrifying and really, it really can be a lot of doors slamming in your face, one after the other, and then a door opens and it just turns to be, it can be full of the most the blockchain industry is unregulated and you have to have your wits about you. Let's put it like that. Yeah. Mm. You have to be very, very careful of who you're dealing with. So when a door doesn't slam in your face, often you find out that what you thought behind the door wasn't quite what they said.
Right. So obviously you're facing some challenges bringing this to market, Kieran, and I really hear that. And I really want to honor the efforts that you're putting in here. But I want to ask, like, what is the vision that Pangea is in service of? And when I say the vision, I mean a vision of maybe a different world or a change that you're wanting to bring about. How would you describe that?
Okay, so this is really simple, right? Creativity is all around us. Like, the changes that we need to see in life are inherent in the smallest places, in the everyday. Like, it's everywhere, like creativity, ideas, new ways of being, yeah? Like, yes. These systems, these monolithic systems of top-down control are unstable and are immature and will not last. These totalitarian kind of structures that society is flirting with, they're in love with. And there has to be a way that creativity can break through these green shoots. I mean, I was this quote that I was looking at from Terence McKenna the other day, and I can't quite remember it, but he was talking about society needing to separate itself from the cultural engineers who are endlessly rehashing the old bones of a dying system. And we're now coming into this time where we can move into a technological superabundance where there is no reason that any single person on this planet should have to work these slavish hours that they're working and not have an abundance of resources. And everybody's realizing that. So where's the space for this creativity to happen? And I believe if it's not on Pangaea, it's going to be somewhere. Pangaea is desperately trying to facilitate those green shoots that are coming up that you can see everywhere of people wanting something different. I want Pangaea to be their kind of earth in which those green shoots take place. That's what we believe. We believe that the societies don't change through some mandate of the super rich and the elites coming up with some idea about how things happen again. They change organically at the base level by people doing things differently, by people taking on new systems that work around them and that they come up with in the moment and they integrate. They don't talk about it, it just happens. And they need those spaces for it to happen. Not because like we're going to look over the ways that things were, you know, 20 years ago, 200 years ago, 2000 years ago. We need to drop those tribal distinctions and those neo-colonialist ideas. We need to get into something that's new and stop looking back and start saying what's new. And the reason we keep looking back is because the people in power want us to keep looking back because it cements them in control, whereas actually we've never been in a better place to go for what's new. And I think everybody knows it. I think everybody can smell it and taste it more so than ever. Well, why can't we have it? Why can't we just have it? Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got to ask you about the name Pangaea. What does that signify?
Okay, so you have to understand that like I've worked with a chap called Simon Roddis, who is like my business partner, my best friend. He's an amazing guy. He's seen me through some really difficult times. And I always name everything, yeah? So I said to him, why don't you name this, yeah? Why don't you name it? Because I name everything and I do the strap lines and I do the words. So he decided to call it Pangaea. And he says that Pangaea is because it's about this return to an old world where everything was together. So the Pangaea being the supercontinent, and he just wanted to be this old world where everything was brought together. So it's a return to this kind of like human side of ourselves, this kind of emotive side of ourselves, and at the same time all being linked together. That's where
I love that. My gosh. Do you have a timeline for launch, Kieran?
We do. We're hopefully going to be launching in early 2025. That's right. We're currently playing around with the closed beta. We do have a product, and if people would like to find out more, then we've got a website which we're going to update soon, and that is Pangaea, so Pangaea.io. Yeah. Fancy domain.
That's lovely. Okay, so gosh, our time has just flown by, but I'd love to ask you one final question, and it's just simply this. If there's something you would have liked to have shared with our audience today, perhaps we haven't had time to get there, or maybe it's just some words of wisdom that you'd like to leave people with, what might it be?
I think the thing that I believe is I quote John Lennon, which is love is the answer. Like not obviously the sort of love that, you know, you have for the girl down the pub, but you know, like love, like the act of giving more of yourself to someone else for their benefit, not necessarily at the detriment of yours, but like to give someone what they need for their benefit. And like if we could all just plug into that, then that is the answer. That is the answer. We need more. We desperately need more of it in today's world. And I think that there has to be, you know, like I say, there is a growing appetite for change. There is a growing awareness that we sit on the edge of superabundance, and we just need to jump forward and stop being scared and stop being frightened and just grab the grab the superabundance that's in front of us. There's no reason why anybody should be dying in poverty or working slavish hours or being unhappy. There's just no reason for it anymore. And it doesn't have to be neo-communism or anything like that. We can work it out. We can work it out. We don't have to keep looking back. And yeah, so yeah, I'm just rabbiting again.
I love it though, Kieran. Thank you so much for stopping by the podcast today and everything that you shared. I'm so excited about this new platform because it's clear we need it. And I can't wait to watch your progress to your launch in 2025. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening in. Before we go, I want to remind you that all the resources and links for our guests are in the show notes at sacredchangemakers.com. And a big thank you to the members of our inner circle who are our podcast sponsors and also our extended community who are helping us make a global impact aligned with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, all visible on our website. And if you're looking for more soul in your life and business, maybe you have a sense that you too have a calling. Maybe you're here to make a bigger impact or simply connect with others on your change-making journey. But if our episode resonated with you today, I hope you'll consider joining us. Again, you can find out more at sacredchangemakers.com. But for now, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your intention and efforts to make our world a better place. Until next time, lots of love.